Mayor Don McCormick, once upon a time, I learned how to juggle. Now, it didn't last because it's quite a skill. I think I may have gotten to 4 balls in the air. And they were tennis balls because if you're using billiard balls, they hurt. Mm-hmm. And the trick was, and this was in a very serious context, this was I was writing a training manual for a large company, and one of the elements was a guy who would teach you how to juggle, which is an important thing, you'd believe it or not. Actually, it was one of the bigger things I took away from the experience. What it took was extraordinary concentration. It wasn't even so much manual dexterity. It was just absolute, total attention. Well, I was thinking about that because I was thinking, how do you juggle the past, the present, and the future? How do you be in the moment, being respectful of and learning from the past while trying to shape the future? Isn't it sort of like juggling?
It is.
So yeah, how do you do
that's
that?
That's a pretty good analogy.
And how are we doing?
Yeah, in fact, that's a great analogy.
Might even be a metaphor.
Yeah.
Sorry.
Yeah, I'm not sure how to respond to that.
Never mind.
It's definitely a challenge, but you know, any organization needs to figure out how to do that, because you simultaneously need to be in all 3 spaces at the same time. And I think the trick is, from an overall communication point of view, is to be consistent with your target audience on where you're at and not confuse the 3, if that makes sense. For example, Kimberly and, you know, where we've come from, where we're at and where we're going is a very good example of that, which you have led us into nicely. And, you know, there are segments of the population that clearly live in the past and are very comfortable with that. They don't want to see change of any kind happen. They're very comfortable with the way things are. The folks in the moment, the at this moment in time is the problem solving moment. You know, where there are things that you need to do, things happen, you need to react to those things, and it's basically, you know, keeping the bus on the road. And then, of course, for the future, most of the activity happening for where things are going, the general population doesn't see that. And in fact, it's probably from an overall, you know, as an elected official or as, you know, one of the designated leaders in the community, our council, we need to be thinking about those things and discussing and debating and doing the things we need to do, not so much in the public light, but in our own way, so that we can gain consensus and everybody can be on the same page with respect to which of the roads that we're going down. And it is, doing all 3 of those at the same time is a little bit of a challenge. No,
and all 3 can involve magical thinking. I mean, the past isn't really the past, and the future isn't really what you think it's going to be.
Absolutely. The past is our heritage, and the heritage is an extremely important part of not only where we're at today, because it's helped define where we're at, but an important part of our future too. The Bavarian city of the Rockies keeps coming up again and again.
Still?
And it does, and it probably will for the next 10 years. Why? Because over the 30 years that we were the Bavarian city of the Rockies, millions and millions of people have become to see us as the Bavarian city of the Rockies. And so,
stop saying it.
And so that is our heritage now. And quite honestly, it's something that we should be proud of, because it was a really interesting point in time. And it had some benefits for Kimberly, lots of very important benefits.
But
for
that
Kimberly.
Was all PR. This was a mining town.
Well,
with
it
some
was.
Frills.
It was the PR.
Think of it as branding.
The PR part of it wasn't so much for the people that lived here. Yeah. It was for the people that we needed to bring here.
Which even though brings you to the present, doesn't it?
Yeah, even though we were a mining town, we were transitioning to the whole tourism economy, which is pretty much what we rely on exclusively today. So it was an investment in the future.
And it also looks to the future of the and.
Yeah. That's exactly right. So I look at whether we're talking our mining heritage, you know, our tourism heritage, or you know, any two or three other types of heritages that we have. Those are important parts of who we are today, and I think will be an important part of our community moving forward for a long time.
This is interesting, the way you frame that. I've been thinking about you since we haven't talked in a while. I sit around and think about you. And this is actually sort of stepping outside of the juggling. A small community is challenged because it doesn't have the resources to have full-time representation. You're a part-time mayor, nominally.
Right.
And you're, you know, the pay is not sufficient to hire, that someone would treat this as a full-time job. This somebody couldn't afford to.
Much less at seven people.
What, $22,000, $23,000 a year, something like that. Is that somewhere in the range? The good news is that means you're not a professional politician, and council members are not professional politicians. The bad news is it's a part-time job, nominally. I suspect for you it's not a part-time job. I would guess you probably spend more, I would guess 40 to 60 hours a week as you know, doing something related to being mayor, which means it's a full-time job plus... And we don't, it sort of puts us in the position of having to, looking for people who are civically minded but are not in mid-career. It's very hard. It is very selective for who can serve these functions.
That's true.
From the standpoint of the mayor, and the mayor is the key figure in this, but you've also got the problem of the council, which is even less well compensated. So again, it's very much a part-time job. I would think, speaking of concentration and juggling, that the inability to concentrate, because you can't do this all day, every day. I mean, you seem to pretty much concentrate on being the mayor of the city, and you do other things. The council doesn't have the luxury of doing that. I would think just, you know, operationally, that makes life very difficult, makes it hard to... collect the information, share the information, think about the information, and act on that information in a way that helps us keep those three balls in the air, but more importantly, to do the things necessary to get us into the future in a way we want to get there.
Again, that that ability to concentrate gets broken up all the time.
Yeah, that's that is very true. I think the challenge is, at least the challenge that I've been finding, is that... because I am taking this on as a full-time job, and it is, the 40 to 60 hours, you know, is a pretty fair estimate. Because I've taken it on as a full-time job, I am moving more quickly than what the counselors are moving. And so what I find is, you know, council can become, can get surprised from time to time because things have moved either quickly or in a direction that they weren't sure it was going to move in, or, you know, whatever. And because the system that we work in, you know, is a weak mayor system. I mean, we have seven votes on council. I only get one. And it means that council needs to be up to speed with the direction that we're heading in and the decisions that need to be made. And, you know, making that happen is definitely a challenge. There's no question about it. And it's not got nothing to do with the personalities involved. It just has to do with how do you disseminate that information in a way that is complete and understandable and keeping people informed without having everybody in the room at the same time, all of the time.
Well, I have only one specific question, and maybe this is one way to be thinking about these issues. I like to think of Kimberley as going from being a deep mine to a sun mine. Town. And you have a more elegant framing of that, but I can't remember it at the moment.
I like that.
I spell it M-I-N-D.
Oh.
It's aspirational.
The reason that I think about it, because it was very important in bringing us to town, it was very important in our decision to move here. A number of people have said to me, you know, next time you talk to the mayor, if the sun mine is so great, they say, why would we want to sell it? Which I think pretty well frames the question of past, present, and future. When the city of the citizens took on a that 76% of the town said, let's take on some debt and do this thing. Mm-hmm. That was a big deal. And that was a transitional moment in my estimation of what the city was mm-hmm. to where it was at that moment, which, and it could have gone any of a number of ways, including not, mm-hmm. to what it wanted to be. So you've gotten to this point, and if it's such a great idea and represents this continuum, mm-hmm. why would you want to sell it?
Well, pardon me, I guess the first thing, Paula, is that the specific ownership of the asset doesn't mean that you own the asset. Let me explain. At this point in time, the city owns it. If we were to sell it, the town still has the asset. It may have a different owner, but the asset and everything that it represents, as far as Kimberley is concerned, is still there. The reason we want to sell it is because the asset as it exists today is not where it needs to be. And the amount of resource, the amount of money that has to be put into moving it to where it needs to be, the city can't afford. We need a partner. We need an investor. We need somebody to be with deep enough pockets to be able to fulfill the vision. What we have today is a representation of that vision, but it's not fulfillment of the vision. It's too small. And so by bringing on, and I use the partner in the sense of an equity, you know, the equity side of things, by bringing on somebody who can take ownership of it and expand it to 15 megawatts or 50 or 100 or whatever the requirement, the business case says the requirement needs to be, we are fulfilling the vision. And it's still in the community. And it's the same with all of the city assets. Kimberley is a small municipality. I would have to think that we are relatively unique in the behavior we've had over the last 20 years with respect to investments in assets that are not the core part of the city's services. Whether we're talking the ski hill or Trickle Creek or bootleg golf courses, the campground, we have all of these assets that are not part of core city services that the city has invested in to build our future with respect to primarily our tourism-based economy. Had the city not made those investments, we would not be where we are today. In fact, we could be a ghost town.
Yeah.
You know, the mine would have closed, the money would have dried up, and people would have had to have left town. While times have been difficult, you know, post-closure, we're nowhere near a ghost town. In fact, quite the opposite. I think we are an absolutely thriving community with a pretty good vibe going on right now. We're nowhere safe in terms of where we need to be, but we're in a pretty good position today.
Nobody's ever safe. Safe is an illusion. But again, I take the sun mine, and thank you for that articulation, but as a past, present, future.
Yeah.
Keeping all of those things somehow, if not balanced, at least in play, affects everything, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Including how you move the snow.
So let me, I'm not sure if this is going in kind of the direction that you might have expected, but let's use that analogy. And, so the past is the past. We know where we've been. Today we have this 1 megawatt sun mine that the community has bought into to the extent of $2 million tax dollars. Where it's going is all we've done is proven that we can do this,
mm-hmm.
right? We have it. We don't have a return on investment with this asset yet that is big enough for a private sector enterprise to come in and do something with it. Similarly, it's not big enough to take the risk of having to put taxpayer money in it to support it over the long haul either. It's at virtually a break even right now. There is no commercial enterprise that would have built a one megawatt sun mine.
That's what government's for.
It was a $5.4 million project for which we've got about a 20-year return on the money. And I mean, there just isn't a private enterprise to do it. So what we've done is we've done the heavy lifting. We've proven the validity of the business case. And now we have an exit strategy that says, you know, X company is going to come in and buy it and expand it and turn it into a profitable enterprise. All the while, the city is reaping the benefits of having it here. More importantly, the vision for this is to do something far more interesting with the power than selling it back to the BC Hydro grid. I mean, that's an outlet, you know, and really it was the what we had to do today in order to make this whole thing work. But at the end of the day, if we don't do something useful with that power, the potential that everybody has seen and the potential that is in the Sun Mine is going to go unfulfilled. So this is why the opportunity to look at something like driving the business park, the future business park that that we hope to have out there. There's a whole host of other things that could be done. We've had expressions of interest about the Sun Mine for people who want to build massive greenhouses and talk about building food locally, talk about growing marijuana locally at some point that particular business case makes sense as well. So there's all kinds of ideas, I guess, is the point that I'm making. Very interesting ideas that can be used, that power can be used for. And if we don't have an opportunity to move down that path, it will go unfulfilled. The promise of this thing will go unfulfilled.
Sticking with the metaphor or the what I'm getting to think is an analogy, the difference is those three balls are not identical.
That's true.
The first two, you have some tangible information. We argue about history. It's not as if that's well-defined, but we certainly know a great deal more about the history than we do about the future. I can't remember.
Hindsight is 20/20.
Well, but it's actually not.
Well, it might be 30/10.
I mean, if you look at the arguments, yeah. I was reading something about Lincoln. Americans still argue about Lincoln. We had a historian friend who said, you want to get in a fight?
A bar fight.
Go into a bar and say, I'm writing a book on Lincoln.
Yeah.
And the next thing you know, there'll be chairs and tables everywhere. So we disagree about history.
Fair enough.
Somebody, I can't remember, who said that prophets don't tell the truth. Don't tell the future. They tell the truth. And it goes, I think, to what you're talking
about.
That's
a biggie. They don't tell the future, they tell the truth. That's a prophet. Mm-hmm. That's not what people think of as prophets.
They think prophets are seers, that they can somehow or other see the future. The challenge, of course, is, what we're all engaged in is trying to make the future better than it might otherwise be.
Mm-hmm. Right. Well, but in essence, the term says, history is, 2020, but really... the reality is what we do is we have something we can learn from.
Right.
And
I
think I think prophets, basically take what has been learned from history and apply it moving forward.
Best they can.
Yeah, and as best you can. And, sometimes you hit the mark and sometimes you don't. But
with a little imagination and with some creativity, and this is the function that you're talking about. And, mm-hmm. and again, to try to do that on a part-time basis, most prophets do it full-time, I'm told.
Yeah, no, it's true. It's what we have to work with.
Yeah.
My plan... going forward is that when I'm finished, when I am not running again and somebody else is going to, take over as mayor, I plan to put a resolution forward to council that turns this into more of a full-time compensated job so that it will remove...
The mayor job or all of the council?
No, just the mayor job. I'm not sure that in a town of 7,000 people, it's reasonable that you would have counselors that would be in there on a full-time basis.
Right.
And I'm not sure you would need to do that, quite frankly. But in terms of the time and effort and things that the mayor needs to do, when you're putting in 50 or 60 hours a week, I'm not sure there's anybody that wouldn't agree that, if you expect younger people to be in that position, you need to be able to pay for that.
Right.
People that are retired, it's obvious why they are able to afford that.
Mm-hmm.
Most people need to do something in their retirement anyway, so why not service to your community? But when you're, 30-something, or probably more realistically 40-something, you have, and especially today, with the millennial group coming up, they're not having kids until they're 40 years old. So you're in a situation where you need the cash flow, you need the income in order to just, survive. And if you want... younger thinking and, a younger leadership, in a community, you need to be able to pay for that.
Part of the argument I think some people would make is that's why we pay Scott Somerville a great deal of money.
To administer.
It's essentially, there's the city manager form of government that works in some places. That's a different animal, though. But I'd like to hear your perspective on why we don't just turn it over to Scott.
Well, as the chief administration officer, Scott runs the city. So he's responsible for the delivery of services that we have to the city. Believe me, that is a full-time job. There's not a lot of hours left over for him to be able to, you know, look into the future and, you know, be able to, you know, do that whole separate side of strategy planning. And that's one of the reasons why the chief admin officer and the mayor need to really work together closely. And I don't mean just in terms of working, but in terms of philosophy and in terms of agreement on the direction that we're going, how it meshes, you know, with existing services, you know, where do we want to take these services? It's a cooperative effort. And to put that on one person, in addition to having to manage the city, I mean, it would be overwhelming. I'm not sure that there is so anybody that could do that.
Scott's the now ball, and you're the profit ball?
Pretty much the forward thinking. Yeah. Absolutely. I mean, I have been very vocal about saying that my job is not to worry about snow removal and, you know, things like that. It's where are we going to be as a community 5 years from now? And if that's where, you know, we are going to be or we want to be, what do we need to do today in order to move forward so that we can achieve that in 5 years or 10 years or whatever the period is?
And you have to be listening as well as thinking to your fellow councils and the people all over the community who still want to have input.
Yeah, absolutely.
This isn't one guy stands on a mountaintop and looks out over the valley.
At his peril. Absolutely at his peril.
Even Moses didn't make it to the promised land.
No, you know, there's a very old cliche about knowledge is power. And I will tell you that I am the happiest and I learn the most when I'm out in the community, just talking to people and getting feedback and understanding what people are thinking. That's a really, really important part of this job as well. And I try and be out there as much as I can.
That gets you to 60 hours.
Well, it does. And it's 7 days a week because there are events and things that happen on weekends where groups expect that the mayor will be there. I've had people say, well, why don't you delegate that to, you know, counselors to do it? And I have done that when I'm not around, but there, you know, people like it when the mayor is there. It's not quite the same otherwise. So there is a connection, you know, that the mayor needs to have with the community in order to be able to get that feedback and continue to understand what, you know, what people are thinking.
You just did a, recently, the State of the City. Mm-hmm. Meeting, which I wasn't there because I wanted somebody to take my seat who doesn't have the chance to talk to you. But the feedback, a little bit I've heard, was very positive. Mm-hmm. But I'm curious how you felt about it.
And you had a good turnout.
It was a good turnout. I think there was somewhere between 85 and 95 people that showed up. And when you consider that the financial plan presentation, which tells people what their taxes are going to be, we get about 10 people.
I mean, the same 10 people every year.
In a good year, yeah. So yeah, it was an excellent turnout. I was really, really happy to see the level of interest that that came forward. We had a question and answer session at the end that went more than a half an hour. And in fact, the moderator, Mike, from the chamber, needed to cut the questions off. We could have gone on for another half hour. And the questions were awesome. They were really, and it wasn't about snow removal on my street or, you know, operational kinds of things. It was people genuinely interested in the state of the city from a financial point of view, from a priorities point of view, and where it is we're headed. You know, what is the future of the city? And so I was really, really pleased with not only the turnout, but the questions that came up at the end.
Was there anything in that surprised you?
No. No, there wasn't actually.
You're doing a good job prophesying, doesn't it?
Did you have, for those of us who were not there, did you have 3 points? I can't count any higher than three that you would like to return to at this moment to say what those 3 points were? No. No is a good answer.
Well, that's a very good question. Let me see if I can think very quickly. You know, I guess one of the points was that we have been talking a lot over the last couple or 3 years about infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And the cost, the deficit and the cost of that infrastructure. And I guess one of the key points was that it's fairly sizable, but only in relation to the assets that we have. So we have about $500 million worth of assets in Kimberley. the deficit is defined by Urban Systems, who went through and did the study, to be about $70 million. That represents about 18% of our asset base. And if you think about it that way, that 18% as a deficit, that's not that big a number. But for a community of 7,000 people, it's a huge number. So one of the messages was that for a city our size, our asset base is really big. And if we want to maintain a reasonable tax regime, a reasonable tax level in town, we need to look at how we're managing those assets and get them down to a reasonable level, and that deficit down to a reasonable level that each year we're spending enough to keep it whole. And so that was one of the key messages that that I wanted to get across at the meeting. And the feedback that I got was that everybody gets that. They understand what it is.
That's a big deal.
And the second part of that is we shouldn't be afraid. Mm-hmm. It's not, the sky is not falling. You know, we're not in danger of, going over the cliff tomorrow. As an administration, we understand what the problem is. We've quantified it. We have a really good handle on it. And we have strategies in place to be able to deal with it. And I guess, those two, linked things were one of the key messages that I had wanted to deliver.
Thank you.